All right, good morning and welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday at 9 o'clock. That means Sandy Williams, my co-host, is here. And hey, Sandy, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. It's not under my helmet.
Come on, man. Hey, man, what a wonderful weekend weather-wise, right?
Yeah, it was wonderful, actually, right until last night. The rain was in our sleep, so that was okay.
Yeah, I mean, the vegetation.
Yeah, we got daffodils coming in.
The vegetation is coming up everywhere. I actually saw a robin. He's a little early, right?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, but they don't know. Their clocks, I guess, are based on...
Well, you know, it's interesting. A lot of birds follow the ice melt. So, you know, there's ducks that we see it when the ice is melting. That's when they fly through and they're going north. And they just follow the ice melt north.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching this robin, and I know that normally they're somewhere around April. The middle of April is when they, or the end of April is when they show up. But he's way ahead of the game. You know, I guess looking for a female robin to.
Yeah, you know, he might be lonely in that regard.
Yeah. He's the only one that I've seen.
Yeah.
But anyway, Sandy, you wanted to talk about artificial intelligence. And for people who don't know.
Yeah, I need some of that.
Well, so let's talk about what artificial intelligence is. We all hear about it, but we really don't. If you really asked us, we couldn't tell you. What it is.
Well, artificial intelligence really relates to computers that can take the data that's given to them.
Do their own thing?
And calculate it all and find relationships between them and develop knowledge from the data that provides them with new algorithms. In other words, they create their own algorithms out of the data that's given to them. So that they actually get smarter.
Okay? Algorithms.
Algorithms are like mathematical. It's coding, essentially.
Right.
Computer coding mathematical algorithms that allow it to make new and different calculations and to take the information that it gets, find the correlations, figure out the correlations, say, okay, now if I see X, I not only know Y, but I also might know Z. Because when X and Y both happen, then I understand that Z is very likely to happen. And so now the computer says, okay, so I've seen X, so likely Z. And it begins to draw conclusions from the data and to apply it, okay? What brought this to mind is Microsoft has come out with a new browser called Bing. And Bing uses a chat bot. Okay, and chatbot is basically an artificial intelligence that's taken all the way to the point of being able to write things. So my son yesterday was saying, here, Dad, look at Bing. Watch this. Write a story about a dog and a rainbow. And 10 seconds later, Bing came up with a 3-page story, fiction story, kind of written for kids, had dogs, names, rainbows, relationships, jokes. It was the whole deal, and it had just went into all the data that it had available to it, which is like all the data that's available to Google. Bing is a search browser much like Google, and had written this profound story. And what's happening is in colleges, I could have said, write an essay about the history of the Russo-Ukrainian War. It would do it. And not only would it would do it in minutes or seconds, and it does it in perfect English. And so there's concern in schools.
Yeah, the students are using that.
Students will use it. They'll turn in papers that are written by this. But, I mean, it's much more profound than that because what it really amounts to is it replaces the need to have human beings assimilating the information and converting it to useful information. And so it allows, for instance, surveillance cameras. You could have 100,000 surveillance cameras, and if you had facial recognition for a broad population, you could the cameras feeding artificial intelligence would know who was where, and what they were probably doing, because the cameras, the AI applied to the data would reach conclusions about what was going on. Okay, and so it is being used. It has been used for quite a while. It's used for automobile control. We have cameras at every intersection. They're beginning to use AI for that because it's beginning to predict when, how much traffic there is, will there be traffic jams, et cetera. Because wherever we're assimilating and accumulating lots of data, we can then take AI, take that data, and figure out what does it mean? What's happening here?
You know, Sandy, there over the last several years, there's been a lot of conjecture from people in this country about China's artificial intelligence far outstripping ours. And if people get a chance to really think about what, I guess it's moving so fast, the artificial intelligence, that people are fearful of what you just said earlier, replaces people.
Well, it can replace people. It also can create, it could be very useful, right? It is very useful, for instance, in crime. And in many cities, London, a whole bunch of cities all across the country have installed, and the world have installed, many, many surveillance cameras, which become very useful when a crime is committed, because they see, and you know, those surveillance cameras are in a position to watch over what's going on. That's a good thing if you're applying it to crime and solving crimes. But what do we think of it if it simply is used to find out where Sandy Williams is every minute of every day, or Earl Ingram, or whomever? And what do we think of that? And I guess I've always said, well, what it does is it turns the whole world into a small town, because if you live in a town of 300 people, everybody knows what everyone's doing. Okay, so one of the positives of a small town is how close you are. One of the negatives people would talk about is the total loss of anonymity. And with artificial intelligence applied to, for instance, surveillance cameras, anonymity might go out the window. We're already using artificial intelligence in the credit industry, credit card use, okay? Credit card use has, for the last several years, been increasingly massaged by artificial intelligence to figure out, okay, Sandy's looked at these things on the internet, he's bought these things with his credit card, he's this age, he's got this kind of an automobile, and all that stuff gets plotted out and put into a computer that's capable of analyzing it and reaching its own conclusions based on all the correlations. People who are this age, who look at this stuff, tend to buy this, and that's what we're getting.
But I still think that part of that, Sandy, is people say, yeah, there's some positive aspects of it, but also those same, that information that they have on us gives us these spam calls.
Yes. No, I mean, from my standpoint, there are positives, because the ads I look at are just the things I'm interested in. Isn't that surprising? You know, you looked at a picture of a Range Rover, suddenly you get an ad for a Range Rover coming across your beam. It has lots of positives. It also has these negatives, but it's going to create an interesting correlation or crossover between various cultures, right? Because we point at China and say, look how much control they're putting on the media, okay? Well, we're already starting to apply controls to media. We don't like, for instance, what's happening on social media. So we want social media to start controlling what they put on it. But as soon as they start controlling what's put on it, other people say, wait, you can't control what I put on it, because you seem to be controlling conservative information. You can't do that. So you immediately get into this sort of socio-political argument about how much control should be applied. Should it be applied by government? Should it be applied by government onto corporations? If it isn't applied, what happens? You know, and so I think artificial intelligence is going to be a center for philosophical debate, political philosophical debate, for a long time now.
You know, Sandy, I think none of us want to see progress made and things moving forward I think where people want to see some controls on things, right? It's moving too fast. This technology is moving so fast that by the time we get it, it's outgrown itself.
Yeah, you know, the next thing you know, they won't need the buggy whips I make.
Yeah.
You know, because progress is gonna get rid of buggies. Oh, my God. No, progress is good. Well, here's the problem. We're not gonna be able to put the genie back in the bottle with respect to progress. The progress genie's out of the bottle, has always been out of the bottle, and is going to be out of the bottle with respect to artificial intelligence. And that's why it's going to be a serious test of sort of political, philosophical kind of the way we implement AI and the way it gets controlled by government and what it means about the kind of government we have, because it already is testing us. And, we can talk about issues that people can call in and easily have positions on, but I'll bet you this kind of an issue will seriously test the thinking of people like CJ, who calls in on a conservative basis. The thinking about AI and its applications cuts right through conservatism and liberalism and gets down to some very basic, philosophical issues.
Well, Sandy, artificial intelligence clearly is permeated through the military. I mean, that's where the stuff starts, right?
Well, surely artificial intelligence will be used to the max with respect to warfare and what to do with warfare, what to do with all the data that can be obtained from surveillance of all different kinds, all the data that gets fit into it about the capabilities of the other army and your munitions and their munitions and movements. Oh, for sure.
So hold that thought. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. You got to think. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. It's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And you know my co-host. And you know, Sandy, artificial intelligence, and we probably see it in our day-to-day lives, but we don't even recognize it. And it's been going on for some time. We just don't recognize it. It's not new.
Oh, sure. The beginning of it was, the music stations that would be able to play back music that you might like because you like country music and you like Merle Haggard and you like this. Now suddenly it's playing for you six different artists who might be right up your alley. That was the beginning of it. That is an application of artificial intelligence. It learned from what you were doing and was able to make decisions about it. And but it's gone from there heavily into advertising, heavily in that area. But it's also been stoked by other things. Every social media, if you look at Instagram or Facebook or any of those, they look at your habits with respect to what you look at, and then they start showing you more of that, and they start creating a special station just for you.
You know, it might be, as long as it's used in a manner that people don't feel threatened by, but I think more than anything else, people know where it is now. It's not where it's going to wind up. It's going to continue. And people are worried about it being used in a negative sense.
Well,
right?
Sure. I mean, you can definitely foresee the day where artificial intelligence would take a bunch of human behaviors and decide which people are apt to carry out criminal activity. This guy's going to be a criminal.
Yeah.
Okay. The computer tells you that. Now the state knows that. Now what do you do about it? Do you decide, let's avoid crime by making sure that everyone who's likely to be a criminal gets put away?
You know, we've seen movies with artificial intelligence and about artificial intelligence. You know, 10 years ago, they were talking about artificial intelligence. And now it's here.
It's getting here.
Yeah. And I think more than anything else, Sandy, that's kind of why what we saw in the movies with artificial intelligence is what scares people today. They somehow believe naively that they are going to these things are going to take over human beings.
I mean, like the one thing I said earlier, the genie's out of the bottle. Whatever can be done with this stuff will get done with it in terms of progress and development of it. So then the question is, how do we deal with it? And what's going to be interesting about it is how the public wants the government to deal with it, because either it's allowed to go on completely on its own, unregulated, but then we'll get all kinds of, I mean, the current talk about the damage that TikTok or other kinds of social media do to children and people is just the beginning of talk about, you know, and then the talk that goes on in Congress and in society about controlling social media. Well, if government's going to control social media, then it's controlling it. Then it's in charge. And what we don't want is government maybe in charge of creating a big brother potential. So it really is going to get complicated terms of what we do about it.
So let me, and I think the fear that people have is not where it is right now, but where it's headed. And artificial intelligence can outthink the average person. It's the really, really geniuses amongst us that may be able to check artificial intelligence, but that's the exception, not the rule, and they're worried about the masses of us.
Well, there's a story that's sort of, it might be apocryphal, meaning that it might not be true, but I think it is, and I think it related to some research that was ongoing last year with respect to artificial intelligence and language. And they taught two machines a language so that they could talk to one another. And after a couple of days of these two machines developing a vocabulary in the language that they had, they came back and found out that they were talking in a language that the scientists didn't understand. They had created their own new language. And the people doing the experiment became kind of terrified by it because they decided they couldn't tell what it was that the machines were hatching, essentially, with their new language. It sounds like a sci-fi movie. But my understanding is they turned the experiment off because it was like, well, we just don't know where this is going.
You know, Sandy, you could see it from the perspective of what it could mean positively as it relates to healthcare.
Oh, it look
and to
it,
what's going on, you know, with the human body and things that can be solutions.
Oh, sure.
I mean, cancer and everything else.
Yes, I mean, artificial intelligence can take so much data about human health conditions, and, you know, our watches keeping track of our temperature and everything will provide even more data that can be applied to us so that pretty soon the diagnostic process will be much, much more sophisticated than it is today. And health service to us can undoubtedly increase. No, there's all kinds of benefits from artificial intelligence. It's just that, you know, with a new technology, with all this potential, you can be sure that potential can be used in ways that will be concerning. Back to TikTok, there was just a story on NPR. People here in the United States are clucking, worrying about TikTok and particularly what it does to young people. And then the person doing research on that here in the United States reports that, well, in China, they have applied some limitations to it. It's turned off at 9 at night. It's got limitations on children's access to it.
I think it is an hour.
Yeah. And so, and then when you, a lot of people are going to scratch their head and say, that's probably a good idea. Okay, do we want our government to do it? Because then then we're pretty much like the Chinese government.
All right, we got to go to the break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. Yes. All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I wanted to, I was reading this article in the Wall Street Journal this morning, and it couldn't help but it says bars, hotels, and restaurants become the economy's fastest growing employers. Bars, hotels, restaurants become the economy's fastest growing employers.
Doesn't say much for our economy.
So you already, Sandy, how is that going to be sustainable for people in this country, if that's those are the number one job creators?
Well, you know, it's not terribly surprising in that every one of us has had either been ourselves or had children or relatives who were waiters, waitresses, worked. You know, these are commonplace jobs. But the sorry thing is when we talked about it, was the United States having a service economy, I always was thinking of, I don't know, technicians in the computer industry, accountants, lawyers, service, you know, white collar service stuff. But if our service industry is hotel workers and restaurant workers, that's not terribly promising in terms of having a growth economy.
No, I mean, it to me, Sandy, when I read the article, all I could think of was,
well, and the other thing about those sectors is most of them have pay hourly wages. Most of them don't pay benefits. They figure out a way to get around the notion of paying benefits to their workers. Lots of them rely on tips for actual income. It's hard to earn a real living middle class wage in any of those industries, in any of those roles in that industry. So, and restaurants are finding this out today because they're having a difficulty hiring people without making the job something more like a profession where people could actually make a living wage. But, you know, we should understand a living wage today, you know, with the median income in Wisconsin of $64,000 a year. I mean, unless you're just simply going to, we're all simply going to just believe that each breadwinner in the United States is going to earn half of a living wage so that the couple that has a family can together earn a total middle-class living wage, which, of course, is an assumption, which is we're rapidly getting to that, okay? And I suppose this is a demonstration of that because these industries don't pay living wages.
So here's the other side of that. If they aren't paying living wages, how can those corporations and companies and businesses, I mean, you know, restaurants and these other places, these service industries, require people who have disposable income for the most part in order to keep them going?
Well, I guess they require people who either are living on the brink and less than can't make it on paycheck to paycheck, or they're relying on people who are living in two breadwinner households, and, you know, both of them have jobs like the one they're offering, so that the two of them together can make it.
So bars, hotels, and restaurants. Hotels, you know, it used to be businesses, and people who worked in the businesses were utilizing the hotels because they would fly everywhere to do business. That, Sandy, is not happening as much anymore, right?
No, certainly the hospitality industry was wrenched by the whole pandemic, and then the change in the Zoom call meeting has had a huge impact on hotels in particular. And we should remember, hotels and restaurants have always been a starting point for immigrants to this country. It's been an entry-type job, an entry into the country for immigrants, and most frequently the people that would be attending to you in hotels in particular and also in restaurants were frequently either students or immigrants.
So I can't see the growth sector in hotels and restaurants if the business community that used to fill up a large percentage of those hotels when business guys were flying from California to New York, that was kind of what was kind of keeping those things going. That's not the case anymore.
Well, if they're hiring people, they have the business to hire them. So that's not the issue in my mind. The issue in my mind is the extent to which the business model in the United States for the last 50 years has involved increasingly paying people less than a living wage, avoiding the payment of benefits, and now the loss of benefits based on the fact that because jobs don't offer like health benefits, many of them, you end up having to buy it yourself, and the cost of health benefits has gone way up. And because the pay scale in this business model is an hourly pay scale, we have a less than a living wage and an inability to. So I think what's going to be required is a rethink of the business model in the United States, and a basic predicate being that people who work full work weeks are going to need to be paid living wages. If they don't, our economy is going to wither. It's going to wither because it's going to fail on the basis of Tom, Dick, and Mary not being able to make it in that economy.
You know, Sandy, is another one of that I was reading this morning in the Wall Street Journal, and it talked about the rise of kickback capitalism. I said, kickback capitalism, what is that?
What is that?
Well, so what a government does best is throw your tax money at favorite constituents. So
Well, like the military complex, right?
Yeah. So when you're talking about capitalism and the definition of that, has it changed? Has it morphed? Is it so? When we keep talking about America being a capitalistic society, my mind started wondering: has the definition of that really changed in this country?
Capitalism has to do with how the businesses raise their money, who their customers are, and who they dance the tune to and is their customers. That certainly has changed because as our government has grown as a percentage of our general economy, the government is the customer for all the money that it spends, right? So you take the defense budget, you know, $858 billion or whatever it is this most recent time period, that's all being spent. Either now a bunch of it is payroll, but a huge amount of that is the purchase of goods and services from third parties out there that's kickback capital. You know, when we build roads, that's kickback capital, right? The customer is the government, and they're buying it from private entities who build roads. And so, you know, it ends up that the government is undoubtedly the biggest player in the U.S. economy by a long shot.
So when the American people, their issue is, and what I thought about, well, what about the people? Where do they fall in that?
Well, the capitalists would say the people fall in it because the more we thrive, the more jobs we can offer. And so the people get to work for the capitalists who have businesses who are thriving at the public trough in terms of getting business that way. And, you know, that road builders, certainly everyone who's in road construction can attribute their job to kickback capital.
But you have said on many occasions, Sandy, that these capitalists, many of them, were not willing to pay a going rate for the American people.
Well, increasingly the business model in America has come around, particularly the growing sector of the hospitality industry, fast food, for instance, which didn't exist in 1950, is a pretty big employer in today's world, and it is clearly built on close to minimum wage, hourly pay, no benefits, and lots of
which
other,
we found out is not a good thing.
Not a good thing
for the American people
and for the workers.
Right.
Yeah. And so, you know, we have an issue with respect to how this plays out. Now, the government being the customer is an issue as well, because you know, it became apparent during the pandemic when we wanted to revitalize the economy. You know, the infrastructure bill was just basically an exercise in a huge expenditure of what this article is calling kickback capital. And the other problem with kickback capital is that it maybe the money is being poured into those industries are not particularly competitive. You know, there aren't, it's not like it's a competitive industry to build fighter jets. You know, there's only a couple of guys that do it, and they don't really compete with each other on a price basis, at least. And so lots of the industries that sell their service to the government are not competitive industries. And so that's damaging to the notion of marketplace capitalism. Capitalism is how you raise money. Marketplace economics is how you allocate resources and who earns the money. And those are two different things. And marketplace economics, to me, is the more important concept.
So economists understand marketplace economics, not the average citizen. The average citizen is trying to find out where they fit in capitalism today. We used to know, you know, capitalism, all of us when, you know, many decades ago, we knew that we had an opportunity to be a part of the capitalistic society. We could go, especially those of us who could see it in going to work 7 days a week, five, six, 7 days a week. And we were certainly received a more than adequate pay. And so we felt like we were part of the capitalistic society that America was at that time. It has evolved, Sandy. And you know, when we keep hearing, you know, Tom talking about we the people out of government, but when we talk about this aspect of it, that's a separate part of government that doesn't include the people.
Well, it's not government. Capitalism isn't government. It's sort of the part that government has taken its hands off of and allows to just operate, although it has a lot of input into it because— number one, there are regulations that could be in place, should be in place, minimum wage regulations,
right?
Requirements to provide health benefits that have been relaxed, you know, there's a bunch of things the government could do to impact this marketplace economy that could cause workers to be in a better position.
Could do, but won't do.
Yeah, it is not doing what maybe was doing more of,
right.
Is doing less of. But that's my concern, that America's version of capitalism, unlike the many of the European countries' version of capitalism, is getting less and less regulated and is getting less and less effective as far as the workers are concerned. And it's probably less effective in terms of being able to supply to the workplace the kind of workers that are needed in a workplace in which there's rapidly growing technologies, evolving technologies. We're finding that out. You know, businesses are having trouble finding workers here in the United States.
Yeah, they are. And workers are finding, having problems finding jobs that will allow them an opportunity to move up that ladder. And, you know, capitalism as it's been defined and where we are right now, they seem like two ships passing in the night, Sandy.
Well, my fear is that business needs to wake up and understand that it's in their interest to invest in society and have a society that is thriving. And that, like I've said, you know, over the last long while, healthcare for all and universal daycare for all would take a huge burden off of industry, and universal training and education would provide to the economy the kind of workers that they need. So I'm surprised that business isn't pushing for it rather than resisting it.
All right, we got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. It's Monday, Monday with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back. So. Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That's Mondays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, I was going across some information on yesterday, and I found this article in the USA Today. It said, I just found myself struggling to keep up. The number of teachers quitting hits new high. And as I was reading the article, and I know a little bit about what's happening with the lack of available teachers in Milwaukee public schools, they're all over the world trying to bring educators in because there aren't enough here in the country, not just in the city, but in the country. Educators are at a premium. And you would think, Sandy, that if educators are at a premium, you know, then in a capitalistic society, you would think that they would be getting paid adequately enough because, you know, they're so rare. But that's not the case. What is it? What's going on?
Well, the business model for teaching for a long time has been that the teacher, the profile teacher, was a person who was so dedicated and felt the mission to teach so strongly that they were willing to take a pay sacrifice from what they could otherwise earn out in the general in the general economy to do what they loved doing, which was teaching. And everyone would admit that's the model for teachers. And it's clear that and so that's been an ongoing thing. Now, teachers do get health benefits. They do get retirement. So that the income they get is better than the normal $64,000 a year median income person in Wisconsin. But $64,000 is more than an incoming teacher makes in MPS or any other school district. That's what a seasoned teacher makes.
I couldn't believe there's $35,000 starting?
Yeah, so you can make that much in the restaurant industry. Okay. And so the business model has been to find these dedicated people who want to do what they love. But now what's happened in the public school systems with the way public schools are being treated and the situation in public schools is making the job they're doing in the public school not the job that they thought it was going to be, and it's not the job they love. And so you've taken away from them the gratification that was the thing they were chasing when they became a teacher. So we're losing teachers. So what's going to have to happen is one of two things. Either the the public education system that's having so much trouble finding teachers is going to collapse and fail and go out of business. Or in order to stay in business, they're going to have to change their business model, and they're going to have to, amongst other things, increase the compensation to teachers. They'll probably also have to find ways to increase the gratification the teachers realize in the workplace and try and restore that. But the other thing is that when I said that that the public school system would fail, the private school system is currently only thriving to some extent because they're able to pay teachers less. And in many circumstances, that's because they're drawing the teachers who, for whatever their circumstances are, which are unique, allow them, maybe because they have a high-income partner that's a breadwinner, that allows them to do what they want and love to do, teaching, at a significant discount from what could otherwise be earned. And that isn't going to work if everybody in America is going to go to a private school. And everyone in America, a notion that everyone in America could be trained adequately by being left to find a private school is just totally, it's thinking you can't even get yourself to. So there's going to have to be a public school system. It can't fail. And so the reason I trust the marketplace is that it's going to have to respond to the conditions that it meets in the marketplace to figure out what it has to pay and what it has to do to make jobs attractive for teachers.
So does the marketplace ever fail, or is it infallible?
Well, the marketplace always bends in the direction of succeeding, okay? Do marketplaces fail? Well, technological development can make some products in the marketplace fail. And that isn't a failure of the marketplace. That's actually a success in the marketplace. The marketplaces, because they're the result of many, many decisions by many people trying to rationally relate to and respond to whatever it is that's happening to them. No, I think marketplaces tend to work. They can fail in the grand scheme, like the business cycle. The Depression was a near collapse of the entire marketplace, but that was the collapse of a financial system, the underpinnings for the marketplace.
You know, one of the reasons that I asked about the marketplace, Sandy, and whether or not the marketplace could fail or not, when we talk about the public schools and the private schools and the fact that, you know, private schools used to be an entity that was only for people who could afford it. Now private schools are no longer that. Just about anybody can now.
Because of the vouchers.
Yes.
Yes.
And so that impact on public schools is going to be, that's not ever going to change. It's only going to get worse.
Yes, unless somehow we were willing to give everyone in the country a voucher and hope that the educational marketplace would be responsive. But that's a place where the marketplace could fail, because the marketplace doesn't promise to serve everyone, okay? One of the reasons we have public education is because we've decided, from a government standpoint, from a political, philosophical standpoint, that everyone needs to be educated. Everyone needs to get a common circumstance that allows them an opportunity.
All right, we got to go to the break. 844-967-2789 is Monday, as Mondays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.